What's up, everybody? It's Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. This is A Talk in the Attic. I'm your host, Kirk Ross, coming at you from my home studio here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I hope y'all are coming off a nice holiday weekend. Of course, I'm referring to Labor Day, the American holiday that provides working folk with a Monday completely free and clear from their demanding work. Labor Day is a day set aside to recognize the American worker for their endless toiling at the behest of the ruling class, who on this particular Labor Day took to the rivers and lakes of this great nation to proudly remind every single person who was interested in getting across the drawbridge that, nuh-uh, not today. For on this Labor Day 2020, the drawbridges shall remain open as a new type of parade proceeds in its God-given path. Laborers, make way for the greatest display of sycophantic bootlicking in American history. That's right, I'm talking about the Trump boat parades that scattered into fruition in yacht clubs across the nation. What better way to celebrate the forgotten hero, the American laborer, than by jumping in your super expensive toy that you never use, cladding it with Trump 2020 flags, and slowly disrupting the day of millions of folks trying to get across various bridges? And what better symbol of hard work and tattered remains of relentless toil than Donald J. Trump, born to a near-peasant real estate mogul with barely enough trust fund to eventually buy and almost immediately bankrupt a casino? I mean, let's give this guy a break. Casinos are hard to make money at. But old President Bonespurs himself, whose only experience in manual labor has been at groundbreaking ceremonies for building projects that were subcontracted out to thousands of actual laborers, many of whom were never actually paid by the Trump Organization. If you don't believe me, go check the court records in Manhattan and surrounding counties. What a perfect symbol for pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, or wingtip laces, than DJT. Of course, it wouldn't be right, would it, if but a few vessels didn't meet their soggy demise during these Trump boat parades in a year filled with so many difficult challenges and so much heartbreak? Did we really need anything else to shake our faith in humanity? So many emotions all bubbling up enough as it is, then I have to check the news only to find that these poor souls, quickly gathering their belongings as their flag-saturated ships capsize into oblivion? And just when I thought there would be no good news on this Labor Day, voila. Thanks, universe, for finally making something positive happen this year. Of course, I'm only joking. Nobody deserves to have their boat sink, even if they've tied their entire identity into worshiping a man who couldn't care less about them or the other little guys. And by the little guy, I mean any loser worth less than $1 billion. So probably all of you, at least I think. Now that said, if any of you listening are in that billionaire range, or even flirting with it, then go check out my Patreon page. I was only joking about Trump, of course, unless you're sick of him too, in which case, F that guy, right? Maybe some of you non-billionaires, aka losers, would be interested in signing up for the Patreon page too. Just go to patreon.com/atalkintheattic, where in addition to supporting the show, you'll have access to exclusive content, merch, and a chance to hone the trajectory of this very project. So please go check it out. I would say no pressure, but come on, I mean, that wouldn't really be authentic, would it? So a little pressure, but nothing beyond that. But let's stick with the Labor Day theme for the body of today's episode, if you don't mind. But we can't get into the body without first starting the show. So, let's start the show.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Daddy, working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, oops, about to slip.
That was Working in the Coal Mine by Lee Dorsey. I mean, how awesome and innocent and catchy is that tune? Of course, that song and all the rest of the music you'll hear today is listed in the Spotify playlist that's linked right here in the show notes. Go check it out. Click the link. Hear all the songs there. Lee Dorsey dropped that particular song in the summer of 1966, making it one of the best years ever for pop songs about coal mines. An alternative song I considered using for that intro was Sam Cooke's Chain Gang.
Well, don't you know That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang.
This one is even a little bit older, dropping 6 years earlier in 1960. I mean, if Sam Cooke took issue with mass incarceration back in 1960, I can't imagine what he'd say now. But for today's discussion, we're going to have to go back a lot further than just 60 years. Let's go way back, and I mean way back, to a time when we were being led by Chester Arthur? Who the fuck is Chester Arthur? For real, I looked up this, who the president was in 1882, the time period that our show will focus on today. And when Google returned Chester Arthur as the answer, I thought for a moment that maybe, just maybe, I'd accidentally typed in who was not president in 1882. Because I know nothing of this dude. And for a moment, this lack of knowledge on POTUS 22 almost derailed us into a full episode on Chester Arthur. But I wouldn't do that to you folks. Not after just hosting an entire episode last Tuesday about wood. I can't follow that up with an even less appealing topic, Chester Arthur. The show has to be more fun than that, right? Which brings us to our actual topic today, the first Labor Day. Not exactly a super exciting topic in and of itself. Not one that rings of comedy, I know. But that's only because y'all don't know what happened on the very first Labor Day. Back on September 5th, 1882. The venue was New York City, Manhattan to be exact, where outside City Hall a growing crowd of laborers filled the streets and sidewalks in anticipation for a speech or a decree or a little parade, who knows. Really, these workers weren't used to having a Monday off, so what else is there to do but go hang out in front of City Hall? Essentially, the loitering had begun to come watch the purported Labor Day parade that was to unfold. The exact origin of who and how a bunch of powerless, low-wage workers were able to get a seemingly random end-of-summer Monday off is a little fuzzy, at least to me, but most sources attribute Peter J. McGuire, then leader of the American Federation of Labor, as the man who spearheaded the Day of Recognition, which was to serve as, quote-unquote, a general holiday for the laboring classes. General holiday for the laboring classes. Sounds so fun. But this was 1882, folks. So mass communication and organization was a far cry from the tools available to us today. If I wanted to organize a parade in this day and age, I could simply take to Facebook and calmly ask the question, who's down for a parade? In 1882, of course, I would have had to hone my skills as a carnival barker, then take to a busy street corner, and with a bullhorn, exclaim, who, pray tell, is down for a parade? Let me rephrase, since none of you passers-by seem to understand this counterintuitive vernacular, down for, who, pray tell, is up for a parade? Anybody? Barnaby? Reginald? Come on, guys, I can see you, fellas. Gents, stop ignoring me. Please. Needless to say, it would have been tough to get the word out back then, which makes it all the more impressive that an estimated 25,000 marchers ultimately turned out that day. Around 9 a.m., as the Manhattan gathering continued to grow around City Hall, police began to show up on horseback for fear that riots might start up. Sound familiar, folks? But instead of tear gas and military-style weaponry, these cops were toting helmets and clubs. Who wants to bet that cops with wooden clubs were a little bit less likely to escalate a mass gathering into a riotous affair than modern police forces? With the parade start time set for 10 a.m., but with very few organized marchers in position, the Grand Marshal of the parade, William McCabe, began hearing rumblings from the crowd that maybe the parade wasn't in the cards, that once again the unsung American workers' hopes for a day of empowerment was not quite ready for its day in the sun.
Boys working on empty, is that the kind of way to face the burning heat?
But McCabe persisted. After all, his police escort was already in place, as were the couple dozen marchers brave enough to actually show their face in public despite fighting the man. Workers and rustabouts, we must march, he likely insisted, but there was a problem. There wasn't a band. You can't have a parade without a band. I mean, everybody knows that. A parade without a band is just a bunch of dudes walking down the street, you know, like get out of the way. McCabe and his marchers were facing the grim reality once again that without music, this parade just wasn't meant to be. Suddenly,
Mr. McCabe! Mr. McCabe, look westward, sir!
Running across the lawn, frantic and excited, was Matthew McGuire, unrelated to the similarly named and aforementioned Peter McGuire. Lots of McGuires back then, I guess. Mr. McCabe! Mr. McCabe! Sorry! I'm quite out of breath. I haven't been doing my aerobic cardiovascular calisthenics of late. Get on with it, McCabe might have shouted. Yes, right. We have a solution to the no-ban conundrum. You see, the Jewelers Union of New York number 2 is crossing the ferry now. Oh, boy, please divulge what I expect you to divulge, McGuire. They've got a band, sir, a real band with instruments and everything. McGuire, you magnificent bastard, I knew we could pull it off. Now, where is this band? They're coming around the corner, listen. And sure as you're hearing me today, the Jewelers Union of Newark No. 2 marched from the riverbanks as their musical sounds slowly echoed their way to City Hall. The crowd grew restless and excited as they suddenly realized that this day of dash hopes for working class revolution was once again back on. Faith restored.
Blobby hog wallet.
The Jewelers Union marched forward, pumping out an all-time great song. Who knows what song it was? Anybody? That's right. It was the number one hit on the summer of 1882 Billboard Hot 100, which of course is not a thing, the banger anthem, responsible for more merriment than such hits as Yankee Doodle and Please Keep That Negro Away From My Wife. That's right, I'm talking about Gilbert and Sullivan's hit jam, When I First Put My Uniform On. Folks, do you know the song? Well, as soon as you hear this toe tapper, you're going to know exactly why legions of suddenly emboldened workers followed the jewelers and flooded the streets. This song rocks. Without further ado, here it is, When I First Put My Uniform On.
When I first put this uniform on, I said as I looked in the glass, it's one to a million, the end is a million, my figure and form surpassed. Gold lace and the charm for the fair, and I've plenty of that and to spare. While I love those professions, when acting in hessians are eloquent everywhere. A fact which I counted upon, when I first put this uniform on. I said when I first put it on, it is played to the various dunce. That every beauty will feel it her duty to yield to its glamour at once. They will see that I'm feeling all laced in a uniform handsome and chaste. But the peripatetics of long-haired aesthetics seem very much more to their taste, which I never counted upon when I first put this uniform on.
You know how people often say, wow, that really holds up even today when referring to old music? Yeah, that's not the case here. I mean, don't get me wrong, the song is pretty solid. It's even kind of funny for its time. In fact, my favorite line goes like this. I didn't anticipate this when I first put my uniform on. Classic lyrics. I'm going to try singing here too. I don't know if I'm going to leave this in or not, but
I didn't anticipate this when I first put my uniform on.
I mean, why are they singing like that? What's going on? Ray Romano was all the rage back then? Suddenly hundreds and eventually thousands joined the march. Hopefully the band knew more tunes than just When I First Put My Uniform On. But come on, it was 1882. There couldn't have been that many other songs. And for nearly 3 hours, supporters of the labor movement marched through New York City. Their eventual landing spot was Reservoir Park, where one newspaper described the scene as, quote-unquote, men on horseback. Men wearing regalia, men with society aprons, and men with flags, musical instruments, badges, and all the other paraphernalia of a procession. Regalia and paraphernalia of a procession? That sounds pretty fun. Another source wrote that kegs of lager were mounted in every conceivable place. Beer kegs in every conceivable place? Are you guys thinking what I'm thinking? Come on, laborers, relax a little and stop mounting these heavy kegs of lager beer in every conceivable place. Take a load off. Hard workers, they just didn't know what to do, I suppose. The party raged late into the evening, 9 p.m., which according to my calculations is equivalent to about 4 a.m. in today's world. It's reported that even non-supporters of the movement came to the park to partake in the fun. See another parallel here? The party ended. The workers had their day in the sun, and then the next day they returned to the same factories that were home to dangerous working conditions, long days, tyrannical management, and in many cases, the last place many workers would see alive. Conditions didn't get that much better, at least not for a while, but the workers persisted, and then their kids did too, and then their kids, and then our grandparents, and our parents. And now us. we're now carrying the torch for the issues of our day, many of which are rooted in the very same dichotomy that the very first Labor Day 138 years ago was also illuminating. Distilled down to its essence, it's about fairness and decency and doing what we can to ensure safety and happiness for ourselves and our families. And just like the riot police with their wooden clubs at City Hall on the first Labor Day, today's cops are being tasked with showing up at today's ground zeros of change. Most labor rights activists in those days showed up in Manhattan in 1882 in complete peace, just as the impossibly lopsided majority of those fighting for change today show up in peace. And just like the party animals who came uninvited to Reservoir Park for a party they didn't really believe in, there's a few hijackers doing the same thing with this movement today. But make no mistake, those few bad apples didn't spoil the bunch in 1882, nor will they in 2020. We've come so far as a nation, as a world, as a human species, since our first Labor Day, haven't we? But the same could have been said looking back from 1882 as well. They'd come a long way too. And that doesn't mean they were perfect, and it certainly doesn't mean they stopped fighting for progress.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small.
I'm not sure really what the exact lesson to be gleaned is here, but a few thoughts come to mind.
By giving you no time instead of it all.
First, know that even though it feels like the most absurd and unstable time ever, it's not. Our immediate and incessant access to the news has changed, but the movement hasn't.
A working class hero is something to be.
Secondly, I'm reminded to make sure that I evaluate my own actions and my own place on the issues, not just from a current-day lens, but from a future backward-looking perspective as well. Kind of a tricky concept. But it makes sense, doesn't it, to ask ourselves regularly, how will history look back upon me? And am I on the right side of it?
They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool.
Now look, each of us stand in different positions on all of these issues, and I am absolutely not saying that I'm right on them all. Nor do I even know where I stand on some of them. I mean, there's just so many damn issues to keep track of these days.
A working class hero is something to be.
But they're all important. And they're all being fought over. And they're all going to settle in a better place tomorrow as they are today. Even if it seems slow, even if it seems like we take a few steps backward here and there. In the end, I truly believe that progress is the inevitable outcome, not to each of us personally. None of us is guaranteed that, but to the nation and to the world and to the universe as a whole. It's kind of optimistic in a way, isn't it? And then my final takeaway from the show today. The 22nd president of the United States was Arthur Chester. I mean, learn something new every day. Look, I have two first names myself, Mr. President. Damn glad to meet you. And with that, let's take it away, Jewelers Union of Newark number 2.
I didn't anticipate that when I first put this uniform on.
For real, though, that's the show today. Here's Coast Modern with Guru to play us out. Peace out, y'all.
Train headed to a plane. in my basement. And even if I'm slow, she's patient with the pace I grow.